You are listening to Setting History Straight with Linda Watson.
Welcome to our show, and we have Terry Burkhoff with us today. Terry, how are you?
Hi, Linda. I'm doing well today. Thank you.
And we are going to be covering or beginning to cover the book of Jeremiah, which just has so much in it. Before we actually start, though, Terry, I thought we would just cover a little history, because Jeremiah was a prophet to Judah, but he also was a prophet to Israel, which we're going to talk about. But he, interestingly enough, it says that he began his ministry when it was in the 13th year of Josiah. Now, if you remember Josiah, there had not been another king like him since the time of David, because he went in and he just absolutely took down everything that was pagan, Baal worship, tore down every altar, every image in the entire land of Israel, and then turned in and did a huge Passover. And there was never any other Passover like that in the history of Israel, we're told. I mean, it was just an incredible Passover, and the people turned their hearts back. And Josiah reigned for 31 years. He may have reigned a little longer than that, but we know that it was at least 31 years. And in the 13th year is when Jeremiah started his prophecies. He also wrote the book of Lamentations, and he also wrote, many people don't know this, but he wrote the book of Kings, which is very interesting. So the man was very versed. He was the son of a Levite priest, and he argued with God because he told God that he was young and he couldn't do this. I mean, he said, I'm too young. God told him, I'm going to put the words in your mouth. And he actually said that he touched his mouth. So it's very interesting verses.
Right. And it just shows, sort of reminds you of Moses when God had called Moses and said, look, go and do this. And he said, I can't speak. He said, you know, why are you choosing me? He didn't want to do it either. So it's just interesting when you look at the prophets that he's called and the message he wants to deliver.
He probably was around 20 years old. He could be much older than that. He would prophesy for almost 40 years in Israel, because we know that there was at least after Josiah died. Now, Josiah died in a battle against Egypt at Megiddo. King of Egypt was Necho, and he had gone to help support Assyria, who was under siege by the people of Babylon, actually Nebuchadnezzar. And so Egypt went to support Assyria, and Josiah went and cut him off before he got to the town that the battle was taking place. It was taking place at a place called Carchemish. And it wound up that Josiah died in that battle, and that the king of Egypt told him, don't get involved in this, because this is really not your concern. It's interesting, because I think he was probably defending Israel, because Israel had fallen to Assyria. Remember, the story is very interesting. But Necho would eventually go back and finish up the battle with Assyria, and it was a stalemate. Babylon was not able to bring them down at that point, but they did bring them down 4 years later. So on the way back, after Josiah had died, the leaders in Israel got together, and they looked at the four sons of Josiah. Well, the first one is not considered, so he must have already passed away. And the second son was Jehoiakim, and he was just evil. So they bypassed him, and they gave it to Jehoahaz. Jehoahaz was in place when Necho came back. At that point, Judah was under the control of Egypt. They were technically under the control of Egypt, and Assyria had not fallen at that point, and the Babylonians hadn't came in at that point. So when Necho came back, he said, I don't know why you put this son in charge, because you bypassed Jehoiakim. And so he takes him out, Jehoahaz, and brings him into prison and puts Jehoiakim in place. Now, Jehoiakim, the Talmud talks about the history on him, how he was such an evil king. It's hard to believe that these boys were so evil when their daddy was such a righteous man. But that's exactly what was going on. So Jehoiakim actually was having relations with his mother, Talmud says, and his daughter-in-law. He was truly wicked.
Wow.
And there was innocent blood shed throughout the land by him. And he reigned for 10 years, at least 10 years. And then when he died, the throne went to his son, and his son stayed on the throne for like 3 months. The throne was then given to Zedekiah, and you know that Judah was taken down under Zedekiah. At that point, that's when Nebuchadnezzar came in, right? and he took down and burned the temple and under Zedekiah. And we know the story about how Zedekiah tried to escape. He was caught, brought back. He went as far as Jericho, was caught, brought back. And so Jeremiah lived through this entire time period, which must have been a terrible time in Israel, to go from having such a wonderful king, Josiah, serving God in every form and fashion, taking down all idols, implementing Passover and the holy days, to three or four of the most wicked kings that Judah ever saw. And so that's the history before we actually start the book of Jeremiah. I thought we'd cover that history so people would know it. If Jeremiah had started his ministry at a young age, let's say 20, he would have been almost 60 by the time Judah had fallen. So he would be an old man.
Linda, it's interesting because if you kind of fast forward and compare to today and you look over 30 or 40 years of what has happened within this nation, you would see the same thing. You know, we've had good leaders and then we've had really wicked and evil leaders, and you see what has happened to this nation as a result of it.
Yes. And, you know, we struggle with this constantly for many, many centuries.
Right.
So let's go ahead and pick up in Jeremiah 1. The first thing, Terry, because the first thing the Father tells you in Jeremiah, verse 5, is that he predestined Jeremiah, did he not?
He sure did. And that just is very interesting when you think about what the Father has done. If he did it for Jeremiah, is it not that he's done it for the rest of us as well?
Yes. So let's go ahead and read Jeremiah 1, verse 5. So Jeremiah 1, verse 5, "Behold, before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. And before thou comest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee, and I ordained thee as a prophet unto the nations." Now, very interesting, because he said, even before he was conceived, I knew him. Did everybody catch that?
And that's so important today for what's going on with this whole abortion issue and this controversy, because all you have to do is go to the scripture and God reveals to you, you know, the things that you need to know about this.
Right. It's a good thing that you brought up the abortion issue, because he touches on that. That was some of the things that were going on in the land of Israel. If you look at Jeremiah 2:34.
"Also in thy skirts is found the blood of the souls of the poor innocents. I have not found it by secret search, but upon all these."
Yes. So he's saying, in your skirts, I've found innocent blood. Now that is absolutely talking about abortion.
Yes.
And it's the poor innocent. In other words, it may have been many of the poor people that were aborting their children. But I think that's a very interesting verse, because that's very much like what's going on in this country also. We're going to prove now that he was actually writing not just for his time that he lived, but also writing for the time of the future. And so how do we know that? And that's the next question we want to cover. How do we know that this book applies to us? And there's much information here, because it tells you in Jeremiah 1, verse 15. And remember that Josiah lived and reigned from around 640 to 600 B.C. That's the time frame he lived. Israel had fallen in 721. That was like over 100 years that Israel had already fallen. So Israel has already fallen. She's already gone into her place, which is above the Black Sea and around the Black Sea, right? So she had already gone into that area. Now, it's interesting because it's 100 years later, and Jeremiah writes this, "For lo, I will call all the families of the kingdom of the north, said the Lord, and they shall come, and they shall set everyone on a throne at the entering of the gates of Jerusalem and against all the walls and around about and seeing all the cities of Judah." Now, he's telling them there's going to be a war, but who is he talking to and telling that there's going to be a war? And that's in Jeremiah 2, verse 4. "Hear you the words of the Lord, O house of Jacob, and all the families of the house of Israel." So he's putting a warning out, not just to Judah, because Judah was the only ones in the land at this point, because they didn't fall into 585 BC. So they were the only ones in the land, because the Assyrians had taken control over the northern kingdom at the top, and they had taken out the people on the right side of the Jordan and brought them into captivity in the second wave. In the last wave, they took out more people from that area, but many of the people had already fled, and we find that in the book of Ezra, the second book of Ezra, chapter 13, talking about how the people of Israel at the top of the land of Israel had already fled out, and they went to the land of Assyria, which we believe was around the Black Sea, and most people will tell you that study history that it was around the Black Sea. So there was no Israelites in the top of the land of Israel at this time. So how is it that he's writing to the families of Israel, and he first tells you there's going to be a war with the king of the north? Then he's telling you, hear, O Israel, all the families of Jacob. So that's all of them. He wasn't just talking to Judah, was he not?
No, he wasn't just talking to Judah, and I think he makes it very plain, and particularly, Linda, when you went through the history and you said that Israel had already gone into captivity. They weren't even around in the area we're talking about, so it has to be talking about a future time.
It has to be talking about a future time. Now, I'm going to prove this, Terry. I'm going to go one more place, and that is in Jeremiah 30, and everybody just hold their finger where they are. Jeremiah 30 and verse 3. For lo, the day comes, said the Lord, that I will bring again the captivity of my people, Israel and Judah, said the Lord. I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it. So he's saying the second time that I will bring again the captivity of my people, Israel and Judah. He said it's going to happen a second time again. So there's no way, if you're reading this honestly, that you can come up with any other assumption. So, Terry, can you read for us chapter 2, verse 7? Because it ties into exactly what we're talking about here.
Sure. And I brought you into a plentiful country to eat the fruit thereof and the goodness thereof. But when ye entered, ye defiled my land and made my heritage an abomination.
Right. So he said, I brought you into this pleasant land. So, yeah, he's talking about the land of Cana that they were in at that time, but it has a dual meaning. It's telling you that this prophecy is also for a different time, a future time, and that he brought them into a plentiful land too. And that's what has truly happened, you know, to us. That is truly what has happened to that we've been brought into this beautiful land, and we've defiled it.
Well, and Linda, I think it's one of the greatest abominations that has happened is that we don't know our history, and we've lost our identity so that nobody can relate the scriptures to what's going on today and to the country that we live in today and what our forefathers have done when they came into this land that was a wilderness. So it's probably one of the greatest deceptions and abominations that have happened because people don't know who they are. And as a result, they don't know how to apply these scriptures.
They don't understand the scriptures. They can't explain Jeremiah 30 that we just read. It's impossible to explain it. If you don't think there's a present day Israel that's alive, that the Israelites are alive and well, which is what the Father promised Jacob in Genesis 49, right? It says, in the last days, these are who you will be. And he starts explaining each one of these brothers and what their nation would be like. And you know, it was nations. It had to be nations because he told them that he would scatter both Simeon and Levi. So if he's scattering Simeon and Levi within the tribes of Israel, then that means they are in the form of nations. They were scattered from the sense that they left the land of Israel and they went all over the world. That's true. But they stayed together as nations. But there is a scattering that's coming, and we will cover that. The scattering that's coming is at their next captivity, that he said he's going to sift them like flour, actually. So, Terry, if you can read verse 8 and 9, chapter 2, verse 8 and 9.
Okay, the priest said not, where is the Lord? And they that handled the law knew me not. The pastors also transgressed against me, and the prophets prophesied by Baal, and walked after things that do not profit. But I think it's interesting that it says that the ones who handled the law knew me not, and that the pastors transgressed against me. And he's talking about, I mean, if you apply it to today and you look at all the things that we've been covering to scriptures to prove that this has a dual application, then it has to be talking about the the prophets and the pastors today that are not teaching and feeding their flock appropriately and looking at these scriptures that warn the people of what's going to become and asking them to repent and turn back to the Father. Yes. So instead, they're defiling, they're transgressing. And, you know, interesting, and we didn't say this, the scripture says, they that handle the law.
And so that's the people that actually teach that you keep the
that's
laws.
Right.
He's not pleased with many of them either.
Exactly.
Verse 9.
Wherefore I will yet plead with you, saith the Lord, and with your children's children will I plead.
Now, let's stop right there because that is an absolute critical verse to prove the point that this is not for these people that's living in the land of Israel at that time, which is right before the fall of Judah, right? It wasn't talking to them. He said, I'm going to plead with your children's children. That's your descendants. He said, in a future time, I'm going to plead with your children's children. So how does that happen, Terry? If we think that it all was said and done when they had the two captivities, the captivity of Israel, the captivity of Judah, and now those books have been fulfilled and they're done, how can that be when he tells you, I'm going to plead with your descendants?
Right. And he is only saying your children, your children's children. So that goes out throughout generations.
And it's very interesting because in verse 19, we're going right through these books and we're hitting the high points, right? And he says, thy own wickedness shall correct thee and thy backsliding shall reprove thee. Because these people were continually backsliding. Under Josiah, they were keeping the law. They were going to Passover. They were keeping the law. It was peace in the land. It was a wonderful time to be in the land of Israel. And you go back through history and you see that there was a constant revival going on and off. It was under Hezekiah. You had many other the kings of Judah were actually considered righteous. Many of them would not tear down the churches of Baal. They allowed the people to still worship Baal in their land. So they didn't tear those down. But many of those kings, you know, actually were considered righteous. When you start reading through the kings of Judah, many of them were considered righteous. And they tried to rule in a righteous way, but they didn't have their whole heart in it. And so he's telling you that you've constantly backslid. Then he goes on and he says, and see that evil thing and bitter that thou hast forsaken the Lord thy God. Now, if that has not happened in this land, I don't know how it could be described as any other way for this country, because nobody wants to talk about God in this country. And I will tell you that the pastors have ruined it for them because they've taught in such a form, in such a way that people have been turned off by their teaching.
Right. And you know, Linda, if they attempt to talk about God, they're shot down right away. And you know, they're persecuted. I mean, if you try to bring up God, you try to bring up anything in the school system today, I mean, you will get persecuted.
And Terry, can you read verse 20 for us?
For of old time I have broken thy yoke and burst thy bands, and thou saidest, I will not transgress when upon every high hill and under every green tree thou wanderest playing the harlot.
Very interesting. Because the green tree that he's talking about here, I'm telling you, is the Christmas tree. Because they were celebrating Christmas just like they did in this land. This is a reference. When every time it talks about you worship under every green tree, that is in reference to putting a Christmas tree up and keeping Christmas. And that's what he's saying right here. And it's referenced in the book of Jeremiah several places. And as we go through, we'll point that out as we hit some of those places. Because it's very interesting because that's actually what he's referenced. So let's move and talk about Jeremiah, the first chapter, because I've laid a foundation to show you that this doesn't apply just to the people living at that time, but it also applies to a future time. But there was a purpose that Jeremiah had. He was given a commission. And so I'm going to read this. This is in Jeremiah 1 and verse 10. I have this day set thee over the nations and over the kingdoms to root up, to pull down, to destroy, to throw down, to build, and to plant. So he was supposed to live during the time that Judah fell, which we know he did. History records that. He's recording that in this book, that he lived all the way to the time of Zedekiah. Then he took the princesses and went into Egypt. And then the history stops. But we know that that history didn't stop there. We know that that little princess was taken out of the land of Egypt, but that's a story for another day. But he was told he would not just tear down a nation, but he would plant a nation, because Zedekiah lost all of his sons. He was brought into prison by Nebuchadnezzar, right? And his three sons were killed in front of him. So he had no more heirs to his throne. He had no more heirs. And so the only heir he could have had is with his daughters, and he had two daughters. Is that correct? What Jeremiah's job was, he's told that you're not just going to destroy when Judah falls, you're also going to plant a new kingdom. We will cover it another time. But interesting that he says that was not his only commission. And we're going to look at what his next commission was. So Terry, in chapter 3, in verse 12, can you read that for us?
Sure. Go and proclaim these words toward the north and say, "Return thou backsliding Israel, saith the Lord, and I will not cause my anger to fall upon you, for I am merciful, saith the Lord, and I will not keep anger forever."
Yes. So he's saying, you know, you're going to destroy and you're going to plant a kingdom, but I also want you to proclaim a message to Israel in the north. Well, that's because Israel had already gone into captivity, remember? They had actually been taken out and brought to the land of Assyria, and they were living around the area that they called Gozan and Harbor. That was an area that was the west side of the land of Assyria, and they were a buffer country that was in between Assyria and the Urartus. The Urartus lived on the other side of Assyria, and they were a very violent war-type community. And so they were put there as a buffer, but they were in the north. So they were in that area there, but many of them, according to Ezra, 2 Ezra 13, they had gone above the Black Sea and were living above the Black Sea in the area we know today as the Ukraine, and they call themselves the Sakai people. They didn't call themselves the Scythians, right? So he said, go proclaim a message to Israel in the north. So that's telling you right there, the prophecy was not just for Judah. It was also for Israel. Does everybody see that? Everybody see that verse? Now, Terry, I'm going to read the next verse, 13. Only acknowledge my iniquity that thou hast transgressed against the Lord thy God and has scattered the ways to the stranger under every green tree. There we go again, under every green tree, and has not obeyed my voice. So you've gone and done like the strangers, and you worshiped under every green tree, and you have forsaken God. And that's what he's telling them. And they were continuing their practices of Baal. Does everybody see that? And here's the interesting verse in 14. Turn, O backsliding children, said the Lord. I am married unto you, and I will take you one of a city and two of a family, and I will bring you into Zion. They never went into Zion, did they, Terry?
No, they didn't. And that's what I was going to say about the previous verse. I mean, was Judah ever in the north? Judah was never in the north, were they?
No, they weren't. So this definitely is referencing, it could have been referencing a few people that were left in at that time, but it was primarily referencing those people that had moved out and had moved above the Black Sea. That was who the focus was. He was warning them, and he's telling them, he said, I'm going to bring the people into Zion. Well, Zion here is representing the millennium, because they never went back to Zion. They never went back to the old land of Israel, except for the tribe of Judah. They would go back under Ezra and Nehemiah, right? But they didn't go back. So this is a future reference for them going into the millennium, because it's talking about, I will take one of you from a city and two of you from a family. So that's a promise that at least two people from every family is going to be saved out of the land of Israel, and one, at least one from every city. So every town in the United States and every town in every one of the Christian nations, there's going to be at least one person saved and two from every family. That's a promise. Terry?
Yes. I mean, I think that gives us a lot of hope there. And things that we had read in the future is that it's a promise that he's given to us. And so we know that when he promises, we know he will fulfill it. I was just going to say, I think the next verse is very interesting as well, Linda, in 3:15, where it says, and I will give you pastors according to my heart, which shall feed you with knowledge and understanding. And this goes back to the previous verse that we had read about the pastors not feeding the people, not giving them knowledge, not teaching them, the ones who had the law and were not feeding and teaching the people and warning them about what was to come.
Right, exactly. In verse 16, it will come to pass. In other words, in the future, he's telling you, in the future, when you have multiplied and increased in the land, in those days, said the Lord, they shall say no more the ark of the covenant of the Lord, neither shall they come to mind, neither shall they remember it. In other words, that has a double meaning right there, because the ark represents your heart and how you serve God with your heart. You serve Yahweh with your heart. And so that's part of that meaning. But the other piece of that meaning is they have nothing to do with the sacrificial system. It doesn't even come to mind talking about the temple. These people will never think about the temple.
And it's such a shame, because they're such significant to everything that was in the temple and everything that was done around it and what it represented. And it's just a shame that we don't have people who want to teach those things today.
Okay, so moving on here. And so we're going now to chapter 4. We're going to move on to chapter 4. And he talks about, again, how Israel was backsliding. And I'm just going to take a second here, Terry, and read in 2 Chronicles. I want to read chapter 31. And this was during the time of Hezekiah. 2 Chronicles 31, and start in verse 1. Now, this is how faithful they were under Hezekiah. He said, now, when all of this was finished, that means Passover, all of Israel that was present went out to the cities of Judah and broke down all the images in pieces and cut down all the groves and threw down all the high places and all the altars in all of Judah and Benjamin and Ephraim and also in Manasseh. And they had utterly destroyed all of them. And then all the children of Israel returned, and every man to his possession. Do you see what it's telling you here? That there were times that they were really very fervent. They kept Passover, and after they came back from Passover with Hezekiah, they went in and they went down the streets and they tore out all the altars and all the statues and everything that was pertaining to an image that was destroyed and thrown in the streets. And I think that's incredible that people think, well, Israel never obeyed God. Well, yes, they did. There were times that they actually did, but they have had a history of constant backsliding.
Right.
So going back to Jeremiah chapter 4, if thou will return, O Israel, said the Lord, and return to me, and if thou will put away thy abominations out of my sight, then shall they not be removed. So if you would just take out the abominations and make a few changes, I won't remove you from your land. I'm not going to remove you from your land. Verse 4, and circumcise yourself to the Lord and take away the foreskin of your heart, you men of Judah. In other words, turn your heart back to me and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So you see here that he's pleading with them at this point to turn their hearts back, to turn their hearts back.
Now, I think there's also a scripture in Amos that talks about that. If you'll go back to the paths, you know, the ancient paths and worship me. So he talks about that. And, you know, many of us think that there's no hope for man, but there is. If we would just turn back, you know, he would have mercy upon us, and then he would forgive us, and then our blessings would come back again.
Yes. So if you will read verse 6 and verse 13, Terry, in chapter 4.
Okay, Jeremiah 4, verse 6. Set up the standard towards Zion. Retire, stay not, for I will bring evil from the north and a great destruction.
Okay, so he keeps talking about, I will bring evil from the north. So these countries that are going to come against Israel at the last days will also be countries from the north. And he defines who they are going to be. He actually tells you who they're going to be. I'm just going to take a second here, and I'm going to flip to Jeremiah 25. And in Jeremiah 25, I'm just going to reference these things real quickly. It says in verse 12, it says, I will punish the king of Babylon and all the nations. And then he starts listening. He starts saying, I'm going to have them drink of the cup of my fury in verse 15. And then he starts listing them in verse 19. He says, Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and then the mingled people in the land of Ur, and then the Philistines, and then Ascalon, and Ekron, and Ashdod, and Edom, and Moab, and the children of Ammon, and the kings of Tyre, and the kings of Zidon, and some of the kings in the islands that are beyond the sea, and Dentan, and Tema, that Tema would be Turkey, by the way, and Buz, and all the other outmost corners. Then the kings of Arabia, and all the kings of the mingled people that dwell in the desert, and all the kings of Zambia, and all the kings of Elam, and all the kings of the Medes. And now he gets to verse 26, and he says, these are all the kings that I'm considering as part of kings of the north. That's what he's telling you. And he says, all of the kings of the north, far and near, one with another, all the kingdoms of the world. So he's telling you that all the nations of the world make up the kings of the north. All the nations of the world make up the kings of the north. And they're going to come against the nations that are the Christian nations that we know today as mainly America, Canada, most of Europe, some of the parts in the Middle East, New Zealand, Australia, Ireland, the Scandinavian countries, Scotland. That is considered the Christian nations today. Those are the people that came out of Western Europe and pushed themselves into all those areas, if you remember. And those people are going to be the people that these kings come against in the future, their descendants. Now, how do we know that? Is there any more proof? And there is in Jeremiah 9. So let's go to Jeremiah 9, verse 25 and 26.
Sure. Behold, the days come, said the Lord, that I will punish all them which are circumcised with the uncircumcised.
Okay, let's just stop there. He's going to even tell you who is circumcised and who isn't. So he's going to give you some examples, but he's telling you that all the kingdoms of the world that are uncircumcised are going to come against Israel. And here's your proof. He said, the uncircumcised will come against the circumcised, and the circumcised are the people that we know as Israel. Okay, and so here's your proof. Go ahead, 26.
Egypt and Judah and Edom and the children of Ammon and Moab and all that are in the utmost corners that dwell in the wilderness. For all these nations are uncircumcised, and all the house of Israel are uncircumcised in the heart.
Right. They're the circumcised people, right? But they're uncircumcised in the heart.
Right.
So he's telling you right here that this is the same thing that many people hear about, that there's a battle going to take place between Esau and Jacob, and it's going to be a worldwide battle. So when people start telling you, well, it's just going to be battles in the Middle East, that is not what the Bible is talking about at all. This never got fulfilled in the time of the captivity of Judah and Israel. It never got fulfilled then. You didn't have all the kingdoms of the world coming against Israel and Judah at the time that they went into captivity. They were taken down by specific companies of people. The Assyrians took down Israel, and Judah was taken down by Babylon. They weren't taken down by all the nations of the world. This has not been fulfilled yet. Does everybody see this? This has not been fulfilled yet. And you can't get around these verses because they haven't been fulfilled. Terry, we're going to go back to Jeremiah 4 now. We were talking about which countries actually come against Israel, right? We are actually right. Talking about that. And we mentioned that in Jeremiah 4, verse 6, right? But it also is mentioned in verse 13.
Behold, he shall come up as clouds, and his chariot shall be as a whirlwind. His horses are swifter than eagles. Woe unto us, for we are spoiled.
Okay, so very interesting, because he's saying they're going to come on your land like a cloud. Now, does that remind you of anything else in Scripture? And if you read Ezekiel 38, Ezekiel 38 should be jumping off the page at this point, because he said, I'm going to cover your land like a cloud with all of these nations of the earth that come against you. They're going to be like a huge cloud that comes over your land. There's going to be so many of them. And that's covered in Ezekiel 38, where it talks about the Gog and Magog and Persia and many of the other nations that come together, and they come against the unwalled cities of Israel. That's what is referencing. It's referencing the battle that goes on in the unwalled cities of Israel, and it says they're going to cover your land when they come to your land like a cloud. There's so many of them. Now, we're going to switch gears a little here. In verse 16, I'm going to read this. Make you mention to the nations, behold, publish again Jerusalem, that watchers come from a far country and give out their voice against the cities of Judah.
The watchers, obviously, and I know that there's other scriptures that go back and refer to them and define who they are, but the watchers really are the people, the called out ones, the first fruits of today.
Yes.
Yes, they come from a far country. So that has nothing to do with the Middle East. The Middle East was never called a far country. So it's interesting that it uses the watchers from a far country.
And now I'm going to read this. Now this is proving again that it's talking to our country, that we are a far country. Australia is a far country. They're calling them far countries because they're farther away from the land of Israel in the Middle East. And so it's telling you, even in Matthew 21, the Father will leave that land. He will leave and he will go to a far country. Does everybody remember that in Matthew 21 that it says the Father, who is the husbandman, who tends the vineyard, will leave and go to a far country? That's in Matthew 21, and if you start reading in verse 33, it said, behold, another parable. There came a certain householder which planted a vineyard, and he hedged around it, and he dug it, and a wine press in it, and he built a tower. Power is us, by the way. And he lent it out to a husbandman and went into a far country. There you go. So he's built this vineyard, and he says he built this vineyard, and he lent it out to a husbandman that went into a far country. So it can't be anybody else but these nations like America, like Canada, like New Zealand, Australia, and many others, that he went into a far country means he left the land of Israel. And so that's referencing the Christian nations of today. We don't think they're in the Bible, but they're everywhere. Are they not, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, we've just referenced a few places where we saw it, but it's, you know, it's interesting. We say three-fourths of the Bible is all about the country of Israel, and it's not, and three-fourths of it is not talking about the Middle East either.
So I'm going to read, we're back to Jeremiah 4, and I'm going to read verse 31. For I've heard the voice as a woman in travail. That's what's going on in our land now. We are a woman in travail. We are under judgment right now because the stuff that's going on in this country, it's just every day it gets worse. And the anguish as her that brings forth her first child. Now, it's really going to come to a head when this nation is taken down, and it will. Rest assured, it's going to be taken down. And it says, the voice of the daughter of Zion. Daughter means descendants, not the people that he was addressing right there, but their descendants, the people that are their descendants, their children, their children's children, as
right.
they mentioned earlier, right? And that yeah, she bewails herself and spreads her hands, saying, woe is me now, for my soul is weary because of the murders. It's going to be a slaughter that goes on in this country, and that's what it's referencing. It's already going on in many of the big cities especially, right?
Yes,
but it is. It's talking about the daughter of Zion. Who is this daughter of Zion they're talking about? These are Christian nations. That's your descendants. This is absolutely talking to our people, but we don't read and see the symbolism. Terry?
Well, and Linda, you know, at the end of it, it says, my soul is wearied because of murderers, and you know, you don't have to look any further until looking in Chicago to know it's that they have the most murders that occur in that city out of any other big city. These are the things, you know, you look here in the Bible and it describes exactly what's going on today in our country.
Okay, so we're going to flip ahead to Jeremiah 6, and we want to go to Jeremiah 6, verse 11.
Therefore, I am full of the fury of the Lord. I am weary with holding in. I will pour it out upon the children abroad and upon the assembly of young men together. For even the husband with the wife shall be taken, the aged with him that is full of days.
Okay, so he said he's going to pour his fury out on the children that are abroad. Now, if you look up that word abroad, it means abroad. It means crossing an ocean. So does everybody see that he's saying everything except putting our names in here? He said the children abroad are the ones I'm going to punish. Does everybody see that? Because it's so unbelievably significant. Now, in that same chapter, I want to read verse 23, and they shall lay hands on a bow and a spear. They are cruel. They're talking about these nations from the north, if you look in verse 22. And they have no mercy, and their voices roar like that of a sea, and they ride upon their horses, and they set array the men of war against my daughter of Zion. They're coming against the daughter. That's the descendants. Zion is just another name for Israel. Okay, so he says, they're coming against my daughter, my descendants of Israel, that we've just been told in this same chapter that are abroad. Does everybody see that? You can't possibly read these verses and not understand that it's not talking. He is hammering it home in every way that he knows how to do it. There's your verse, Terry, that you love. Can you read chapter 6 of Jeremiah, verse 16?
6, verse 16. Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see and ask for the old paths where is the good way and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. And, you know, Linda just talks about, he's telling us to return to the ancient paths, return to the laws that were originally given to us, the covenant that was established with Israel, return to it. But because we don't know who we are, because we've forgotten our identity and we don't know who this nation is, you know, people say, well, the law's done away with, you don't have to follow that anymore. And then we don't recognize when he's talking to us about the scripture, who we really are. And he's telling us, go ahead and walk in those ways.
Yes. So, and here he hits again in verse 26 in that same chapter, chapter 6. He says, O daughter of my people. Oh, descendants of my people, I'm talking to your descendants, your children. Like he said, your children's children is who I'm talking to here. I'm going to plead with them because he says, oh, daughter of my people, gird up with sackcloth and wallow thyself in ashes. Make thee mourning as for an only child. Bitter lamentations for the spoilers shall come on you suddenly. And so here it is referencing the same thing that it's the daughter of my people. He's talking to the descendants of the people that were living in the land at that time. And you can't make it say anything that it's not saying. So he's talking to, I believe, the people at this time, because I think that's when these verses are going to be fulfilled in our lifetime. Because many of the prophecies are beginning to come true now, and we can see that. But he references over and over again the daughter of my people. The daughter of my people, over and over again.
Well, and so, Linda, in verse 27, remember we were talking about who the watchers were in the tower?
Yes.
It says, I have set thee for a tower in a fortress among my people, that thou may know and try their ways.
Unbelievable, because he's really talking to us.
Yes, he is.
And that he's really saying that you're going to blow a trumpet, the sound of a trumpet, but they will not hearken. He said, my watchmen are trying to tell the people. You know, my watchmen are telling them, but they're not hearkening.
Right.
So now, there's a verse that's critical that we need to read, and that is in Jeremiah 8, verse 19. And it says, behold, the voice of the cry of the daughter of my people, because they dwell in a far country. Here we go. They're in a far country. They're away from the Middle East.
And the term, the daughter of my people, again, here's the children's children, again, he's talking about in the far country.
And then he says something interesting. He says, is not the Lord in Zion? In other words, am I not here among you? Am I not here that you can't call out to me? And he says, is not her king in her? Because he's dwelling among his people. Israel needs to understand that he dwells among him and he is their king. And it goes on in verse 20 because he really is laying the hammer down here. He says, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. So in other words, my people, we've sent the message out, and the people are not listening. The people are not listening. There's no harvest going on. Harvest meaning people turning their hearts back to God. And then it goes, for the hurt of the daughter of my people am I hurt. I am black, and astonishment has taken hold on me. And he goes over and over and over and talks about the daughter of my people. How in the world do we read this Bible and not see that it applies to us? I don't understand how people today in all of these churches that keep the Sabbath and keep the holy days cannot read this and see that it applies. It's just beyond me because it's so absolutely direct. Now, Terry, we want to go to and cover Jeremiah, part of Jeremiah 15, do we not? And
yes.
We're going to cover, if you will read Jeremiah 15, verse 11, and then we want to come back down to verse 19 through 21, if you'll read all of that.
The Lord said, verily, it shall be well with thy remnant. Verily, I will cause the enemy to entreat thee well in the time of evil and in the time of affliction.
So I think this is so important because now he's telling you he has a remnant. That's some people that are in the land that have their heart turned back that want to serve him. That is that remnant, right? And he's telling you that I will cause in that day the enemy when it comes in, I'm going to have them treat you well. If you still remain in the land, verily I will cause the enemy to entreat thee well in the time of evil, at the time of the affliction. You're going to be treated well because I'm going to put protection around you. You are following and practicing. He's going to put protection around you during this time. So, Terry, we're going to come from verse, 19 down to 21?
Sure. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, if thou return, then will I bring thee again, and thou shalt stand before me. And if thou take forth the precious from the vial, thou shalt be as my mouth. Let them return unto thee, but return not thou unto them.
Right. So he's saying that you're going to be like a precious thing in a vial. And that's what he's comparing you to. He said, if you will return back to me, you're going to be like this precious thing in a vial. You know, some people buy these really expensive perfumes and they come in these little glass bottles, right? And they cost, you know, $40-$50 an ounce or something. And so that's what he's comparing us to, that we're this precious little thing in a vial. Goes on and he says, if thou shalt be as my mouth, and you will let them that return unto me, return not unto them, he says. So he says, you're going to be like my mouthpiece.
On my behalf, right.
Yes. So very interesting. So go ahead in verse 20 and 21.
And I will make thee unto this people a fenced brazen wall, and they shall fight against thee, but they shall not prevail against thee. For I am with thee to save thee and to deliver thee, saith the Lord. Interesting, Linda, that it says, I will make thee unto this people a fenced brazen wall. Well, Israel already has a wall, but we don't have one. But what are we talking about building in this country right now?
A wall.
A wall.
And he says, but I am with you. He's trying to tell you that even in this time, he's going to be with us and he's going to save us. And I'm going to deliver you. So I'm going to save you. I'm going to deliver you. Because if you're following my way and you're my remnant, I'm going to deliver you and I'm going to save you. That doesn't mean you're not going to get a skint nose. It's going to save your life. And he's going to deliver you out of it. And it's going to be a 3.5-year period, we're told. All right, go on, 21.
And I will deliver thee out of the hand of the wicked, and I will redeem thee out of the hand of the terrible. And this is just what you were talking about, Linda. He's going to save his people. He's going to protect them. He's going to deliver you out of the hand of the wicked and also the people, the terrible people that are going to come upon this country.
So I think that's wonderful promises that he's given to us, that if we will follow him, he's going to save us. And we're going to be redeemed out of the hand of these people that have taken us, and he said, even the most terrible. So interesting stuff.
I think, Linda, just to know that the final thought to this is there is hope, and we are the watchmen, and we have a job that we have been given to do. If people are not listening now, there will be a time where they will listen.
Yes. So with that, Terry, we're going to close, and we're going to say blessings to all. Thank you very much for coming on with us, and we're going to close. Blessings to all. Good night.
Good night.